It's
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Armin Kasabian, Anna Mateo, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Armin Kasabian.
Healthcare workers across the United States are busy fighting COVID-19 in overcrowded hospitals. At the same time, there is a great need for medical workers to give millions of newly arrived vaccine doses. To take some of the pressure off the healthcare workers, some U.S. states are asking medical and nursing students, in some cases even firefighters, to help give the shots. So far, at least 7 state health departments are looking for volunteers to help out at vaccination centers. Departments are cooperating with local universities or nursing schools. Some are offering incentives, such as lowering students' costs to study and giving hands-on training to first responders. COVID-19 has left more than 333,000 Americans dead and caused great economic harm. But the new vaccines are the best hope many have to see things turn around. This month, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the first 2 COVID-19 vaccines, one from drug maker Pfizer and BioNTech, the other from Moderna. As of December 23rd, almost 10 million doses had been shipped across the country. But only about 1 million were used because of limited support at hospitals and the special requirements for preparing the shots. The slow start will make it difficult for the federal government to reach its goal of vaccinating nearly 20 million people before the end of 2020. The current vaccination programs are centering mainly on frontline healthcare workers. But beginning in January or February, the vaccination drive is expected to expand to tens of millions of essential industry workers. From New York to Tennessee, states are hoping that support from medical and nursing students will let medical workers turn all their efforts to the record numbers of the new COVID-19 patients. Being able to use volunteers means the healthcare workers can continue to perform their normal duties, which is crucial as our hospitalization rate has increased, a spokeswoman from Indiana University's School of Medicine told Reuters news agency. As the first vaccines arrived, Indiana health officials called on the state university because its campuses are spread over a large area. More than 630 of Indiana University's medical and nursing students have signed up as volunteers and received 90 minutes of online and hands-on training. Fourth-year medical student Nicholas Clough recently began giving COVID-19 vaccines to healthcare workers. He has lost several family members during the pandemic. It finally felt like it was a real, tangible strike back against COVID, Clough told Reuters. In California, first responders have been trained to give the vaccine first to their coworkers. They have already received online training and will have another one-hour live training session, said Peter Sanders, a spokesman from the Los Angeles Fire Department. The department was expecting doses of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine. Some states are not actively looking for volunteers until there are more vaccines ready for the public. So far, only Massachusetts and New York have changed their laws for who can give shots. On December 13th, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo acted to permit students from medically related fields to give the flu and COVID-19 shots with supervision. We encourage all medical and nursing students to register now, so they will be ready when their assistance is needed, a health department spokeswoman said. I'm Armin Kasabian.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Today, we look back on the year 2020. In early January, few people knew about a disease that was spreading in the Chinese city of Wuhan. It was caused by a coronavirus similar to SARS, which first appeared in southern China in 2002, and MERS, which struck the Middle East in 2012.
An early report by the Associated Press gave a short timeline of important events at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. January 23rd, the World Health Organization said the viral disease in China that has sickened hundreds of people is not yet a global health emergency. January 24th, China reports that the number of virus cases has increased to 1,287 and the number of deaths rose to 41. January 26th, the United States confirmed 5 cases of the new virus. All cases were people who traveled to the Chinese city of Wuhan.
On January 30th, the World Health Organization's timeline states that the WHO Director General declared the novel coronavirus outbreak a public health emergency of international concern. This is the WHO's highest level of warning. The next day, U.S. President Donald Trump ordered most entry by foreign nationals from China suspended. By February 1st, the disease had reportedly killed more than 200 people in China and infected thousands. The fast-spreading virus had been confirmed in more than 20 countries and territories. The list included Japan, South Korea, Singapore, Thailand, Vietnam, and Cambodia. But countries outside of Asia, including the United States, Australia, Canada, Germany, Britain, and France, had reported cases. Most of those who had been infected had recently visited Wuhan. China barred travel from Wuhan and other cities in central Hubei province. The ban placed a partial quarantine on more than 50 million people, something that had never happened before.
In March, Trump restricted travel from Europe and declared a national emergency. To stop the spread of the virus, Spain locked down its 46 million citizens. France ordered the closing of its most popular attractions, the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre Art Museum, the cafes, and restaurants. Other governments also took measures to contain the coronavirus. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson closed most stores and banned gatherings for 3 weeks to stop the spread. Italy overtook China as the country with most coronavirus-related deaths.
The Johns Hopkins University Online Coronavirus Resource Center has been tracking the number of cases and deaths. On December 24th, it reported that over 1.7 million people have died from COVID-19 around the world. The United States has been hit the hardest, with more than 320,000 reported deaths. Second is Brazil, with more than 189,000. India is third, with just over 146,000. But there was also good news. In September, the AP also reported that countries on the African continent had been praised for their efforts early in the pandemic.
As new tests for the virus became available, cases began to increase again in November in countries around the world. Officials have blamed holiday travel and gatherings for increases in COVID-19 cases in both Canada and the United States. The U.S. has experienced an increase in both infections and deaths. In December, several countries again tightened restrictions on their citizens to reduce the increase in COVID cases. On December 16th, cases in Italy neared 2 million, with about 70,000 deaths. That made it the highest in Europe. Also on December 16th, the AP reported that South Korea was also experiencing a surge, or fast increase in cases.
However, the end of the year also saw promising news of effective vaccines. Two vaccines, one made by the U.S. company Pfizer and Germany's BioNTech, and another by Moderna, have been approved for emergency use by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Officials have announced the goal of vaccinating at least 20 million Americans by the end of the year. On December 8th, Britain announced it had started its vaccination effort. 90-year-old Margaret Keenan became the first patient to get the Pfizer vaccine in Britain. Then, in late December, reports from Britain and South Africa suggested that the virus had begun to change or mutate. However, details of a possible mutated virus remain unclear. It is still unknown if this mutated virus will be a problem for the current vaccines. But health officials agree that the approval of effective vaccines marks a turning point in the coronavirus health crisis.
In 2020, the worldwide health crisis not only changed how people worked and what they did, it added new words to everyday speech. Words such as face mask, PPE, quarantine, and vaccine became part of our everyday language. We spoke about super spreader events, contact tracing, and shelter-in-place orders. We also learned to keep our social distance and to isolate ourselves. If 2020 has a bright spot, it is this. We all know more about viruses, how they spread, how they change, how to stay safe. Many of us even relearned how to wash our hands the right way and how to clean surfaces correctly. Programs on these methods were among our most popular.
However, our listeners showed that they were also interested in stories about other health and lifestyle subjects. Stories about cold weather gardening and composting were popular on our website. Also, stories about how to stay happy and to maintain our attention during the pandemic were also well received. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Year in Review from VOA Learning English. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. During the second half of the 19th century, the United States was not concerned much with events in other countries. It was too busy dealing with events inside its own borders. At that time, the nation was recovering from the Civil War. It was expanding to the West, and it was developing industries. As production increased, the United States began trading more and more with other countries. At the same time, it needed a new foreign policy to defend its interests. Morris Joyce and Larry West discuss America's foreign policy in the late 1800s.
A growing number of lawmakers called for a new foreign policy. One was Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts. Lodge said, "The great nations of the world were taking control of the world's undeveloped areas." As one of the great nations, Lodge said, "The United States must not fall out of this line of march." Another lawmaker said, "Fate has written our policy. The trade of the world must and shall be ours." Some of these ideas came from the writings of Captain Alfred Mahan. He was head of America's Naval War College. Mahan wrote that all the great nations in history had possessed great sea power. He said the United States must build up its sea power, too, if it wanted to be a great nation. Sea power, Mahan said, was more than a strong navy. It was an economy that could produce goods for export. It was trade ships that could carry the goods. It was colonies that could supply raw materials and markets. And it was overseas naval bases that could defend American interests far from home.
The Washington Post newspaper described America's growing power this way. "A new understanding seems to have come upon us, an understanding of our strength, and with it, a new feeling. We want to show our strength. We are face to face with a strange fate. The taste of empire is in the mouth of the people." The Washington Post was not speaking for everyone, of course. In fact, many American presidents of the late 1800s did not have this taste for empire. Yet, they were forced to face the future. Changes were coming, and it was their responsibility to guide the nation through the changes. For this reason, the United States entered into several agreements with foreign lands during the late 1800s.
In 1878, for example, the United States signed a treaty with Samoa. The United States agreed to help the South Pacific Islands settle any differences with other nations. A few years later, the treaty was put to a test. A group of Germans living in Samoa forced the island's ruler from power. They replaced him with a ruler who was more friendly to Germany. For a time, it seemed the United States and Germany would go to war. But when American warships arrived in Samoa, so did a big storm. The storm smashed both American and German ships. Neither side was left with a force strong enough to fight. In 1889, the United States, Germany, and Britain agreed that Samoa should be an independent kingdom. For 10 years, local leaders attempted to establish a strong government. Their efforts failed. In 1899, Germany took control of Samoa's large western islands. The United States took control of the smaller islands to the east.
Events in another group of Pacific Ocean islands affected American foreign policy in the late 1800s. These were the Hawaiian Islands. Hawaii was an important port for American trade ships sailing between the United States and China. Good relations between Hawaii and the United States were necessary to keep the port open to American ships. In 1891, Liliuokalani became Queen of Hawaii. She was not friendly to the United States. A group of American businessmen and planters in Hawaii plotted to oust her. The group started an uprising. Then it called on the United States for protection. Queen Liliuokalani was forced to surrender. The businessmen and planters formed a new government. They wanted Hawaii to be part of the United States. By the end of the century, Congress had made Hawaii an American territory.
The United States also offered to serve as a negotiator in several international disputes during the late 1800s. One dispute involved Britain and Venezuela. Both countries claimed land that bordered the British colony of Guyana on the northeast coast of South America. The situation became tense when gold was discovered in the disputed area. The United States offered to negotiate an agreement. Britain refused the offer. The United States offered again. Britain refused again. Finally, President Grover Cleveland asked the United States Congress to appoint a committee to decide the border. Before the American committee had a chance to meet, Britain and Venezuela agreed to let an international committee decide.
In 1895, Cuban rebels revolted against the colonial government. They tried to destroy the economy of the island by burning private property. Spain sent a large force to Cuba to crush the revolt. Thousands of persons were arrested and put into prison camps. Many died of hunger and disease. Spain was denounced for its cruelty.
It was difficult to get a true picture of what was happening in Cuba. American newspapers sent reporters to the island. But much of what they wrote about never happened. The reporters knew very well that exciting and horrifying stories sold newspapers. So they made up stories about bloody battles and Spanish cruelty. One incident has become famous in American newspaper history. Publisher William Randolph Hearst sent artist Frederick Remington to Cuba to paint pictures of the fighting. Remington spent several months in Havana. He saw no fighting. He sent Hearst a message. Things were quiet, Remington said. There would be no war. Hearst sent back this answer. You supply the pictures. I'll supply the war.
The newspaper built up strong public feeling against Spain. Soon, many Americans were calling for war to free Cuba from Spanish rule. William McKinley was president. He did not want the United States to become involved. He did, however, offer to help Spain find a solution that would return peace to the island. Spain refused the offer. It attempted to improve the situation in Cuba by itself. Spain called home the military commander accused of cruelty. It stopped putting people in prison camps. It offered equal political rights to all Cubans, and it promised them self-rule in the future.
President McKinley welcomed Spain's policy statements. He felt Spain should be left alone to honor its promises to the Cuban people. He said the United States would not interfere. At about that time, however, riots broke out in Havana. President McKinley said it was his responsibility to protect the lives and property of Americans living there. So he sent the battleship Maine to Havana. During the early weeks of 1898, President McKinley waited for Spain to act on its promises to Cuba. He saw little progress. Relations between the United States and Spain became tense. Then, on the night of February 15th, a powerful explosion shook the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor. The ship sank. More than 250 American sailors were dead.
No one knew what caused the explosion on the battleship Maine. The United States said it was an underwater bomb. Spain said it was something on the ship itself. There was some evidence the explosion was caused by an accident in the ship's fuel tanks. Yet, some people in the United States blamed Spain anyway. They demanded war. They cried, "Remember the Maine!"
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.